As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hi there, this is the Athletic Football Podcast Weekend Preview. Slightly different feel to the show this week as we look ahead to the first international break of this season. I'm Adam Leventhal at the Athletic HQ in London once again. And we're here every Friday to look ahead to the weekend's action, the major talking points as well. And alongside me today, we have a bit of rotation, a returning hero and a debutante. Let's start with the returning Nick Miller, still fresh, still buoyant from Nottingham Forest win at Stamford Bridge. You've still got a smile on your face, haven't you?
I've been grinning all week. It's been absolutely marvellous.
Yeah.
I was there as well. I was in the away end, which is a rare pleasure. But yes, it was absolutely glorious.
Yeah, good for you. It was a good win. A good win. And you're looking good to stay in the Premier League.
Oh, I thought you were saying I was looking good.
Then. Well, no,
I
always look good. You
know, I was going to take the compliment. But yeah I've decided after four games of the season that Forest are going to be absolutely fine, and there's going to be no concerns at all over the next 9 months or so.
And the drama club will not deliver any drama from now until the end of the season.
No, it's plain sailing.
Absolutely fine. Everything will be fine. Everything will be fine on this podcast in terms of data, because our guru is back. What a tenuous link. It is Tom Harris. How are you? Ready to go again? You return. You've kept your place in the side.
Yeah, delighted. I mean, I've got a long way to go to catch up to Nick's, you know, incredible record, but just to be mentioned in the same breath, it's an honour.
Excellent. No, it's good to have you on board. And a debut for Thomas Hill, Lopez Menchero. Thomas, for people who aren't aware of who you are and where you come from, who are you and where do you come from and what do you do for The Athletic?
Well, thanks very much for having me on. I'm junior Spain editor, so you might be used to reading our Real Madrid and Barcelona coverage. I help edit that, occasionally write as well, half Spanish, so close to my heart. That's my background.
And it's been a busy time for various reasons with Spain, of course. Great to have you all on the show. However much I love it and however much I was going to attempt to do a fixture formation for the international break, which goes on for 2 weeks, I've been told in no uncertain terms, don't even try it, sunshine. All right, leave it out. We're not going to do a fixture formation. There's loads of international fixtures all over the world, and you'll be able to watch them if you wish. Let's start by talking about England. They are the masters of qualifying campaigns, and as usual, I mean, it sounds like a bit of a sort of an arrogant thing to say, but it is very much in recent years, as usual, that they have a perfect record so far. 4 wins out of 4, they beat Italy away, Ukraine 2-0 at home, Malta 4-0 away, and then North Macedonia in their last qualifier in June 7-0. It's the start now of the reverse fixtures. First up, Ukraine in Poland on Saturday. Nick, let's start with you. Are you comfortable as a sort of an older person like me Are you in your 40s?
Just in my 40s, yeah.
I was
40 a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, so that's what I would class as an older person in the realms of our company. That's
okay,
that's
fine.
Yeah, Tom, nice. Tom, you are?
23.
Right, 23. Thomas?
25.
Right, exactly. So we're
absolutely
old.
Disgusting, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Vile.
Can only apologise.
But I just wanted to add a little bit of detailed data context to my point.
Experienced, yeah. Yes,
experienced, authoritative.
There you go.
Are you comfortable with the way that you have watched England over the years being favourites for a tournament next summer with the likes of France, obviously the host Germany at Euro 2024? Do you feel that England will be in a strong position to go one better than they did at the last Euros?
I mean, on a sort of spiritual level, no, never comfortable with England being, you know, favourites in any kind of sport at all, even the ones they're really, really good at.
I don't
think it's on a kind of more logical level. I don't think you can really say that anyone is favourites above France for a tournament like that, and then obviously Germany hosts. So yeah, it's just a sort of classic thing with England, is that even though they have got to, you know, final, semi-final, quarter-final last time, it still retains that thing of England look really good until they face a top team. Which is sort of where they've come unstuck in pretty much every tournament since anyone can really remember. So no, the short answer to your question is not at all comfortable with England being favourites for anything.
Tom, from a sort of like a hipster point of view, is there any sort of random team that we're missing here? Not necessarily random, but more of a side that is building well towards this tournament that maybe in England we're not necessarily completely tuned in with?
Yeah, I mean, these kind of tournaments, you know, we've seen in the last couple of years, Denmark and Croatia have had good runs. Just looking at the kind of list of teams who could be in there, I think it is difficult to overlook France and Germany and Spain as well, to be fair. I mean, I think they've been building relatively well. But obviously, there's a lot of drama off the pitch at the moment, which I'm sure we'll get into. But yeah, I think it's probably the same old group of teams at the top, and then your Turkeys, dare we say it, Croatia's, Denmark's, you know, close behind.
Okay, Thomas, I wanted to talk to you about one person in particular. Obviously, with your Spain leanings, people will have been watching, and if you're English, loving watching Jude Bellingham dominate in La Liga already. He's scored what, 5 goals in 4 games.
Just with a shot. Sorry, I spilled it. Bellingham scored.
Last one against Getafe in the last minute. There's genuine excitement seeing a guy like that come back in an England shirt. Just give us an insight into how well he has done in La Liga for people who haven't necessarily been reading your work and the team's work.
Yeah, I mean, he's doing all the right things. It really does feel like he's on the path to being the best English player they've ever had. I mean, even David Beckham really didn't start with that kind of excitement around him, I'd say. He's obviously scored these goals, 5 goals in 4 games, as you say, seems to be replacing Benzema in attack, which is crazy to say when Benzema's a striker and Bellingham's a midfielder. But Ancelotti keeps talking about this thing of, we didn't look at other strikers because actually he believes that the club thought that Bellingham could replace Benzema. And at the moment, it seems to be going that way. Whether he can keep that up for the rest of the season, who knows? But I like the way he's embracing the culture. I think a lot of Madrid fans like that as well, and it's a stark contrast to Gareth Bale, who was obviously their last British recruit, who didn't seem to quite adapt in the same way. The sky's the limit really for Bellingham at Madrid.
I've seen some great clips of Bellingham, just little snapshot moments on the field, toying with defenders, moving one way, selling them a dummy, and then basically taking the piss out of them afterwards, which was great to see. Another guy that I wanted to speak about is Jordan Henderson. He's also in that England midfield department. For people who aren't aware, this week he gave an exclusive interview to The Athletic's David Ornstein and Adam Kraft, and just trying to explain his reasoning for going to Saudi Arabia to play for Al Ettifaq. He's started the last 3 qualifiers for England. Do you feel that this is Southgate's loyalty gone mad, or does he deserve a place in that England squad, maybe not lineup at least?
Yeah, I mean, obviously this is just one competitive game and one friendly that this squad's been called up for. But it does seem to me, from a footballing perspective, that, you know, it's another all-rounder that England don't really need in that midfield, because obviously you've got Declan Rice now, who has just turned into an unbelievable player. He's just such a powerful runner. The really good piece by Mark Carey actually on site talking about his defensive capabilities. Mm. He's an excellent sweeper. Then you've also got Jude Bellingham, who's just talking about just so relentless, his energy in the midfield. Do you really need another kind of all-round midfielder? We've already got Conor Gallagher in that squad as well, even Calvin Phillips. Is Jordan Henderson the type of player? You know, perhaps we could be a bit more adventurous and look at some of the more attacking options. So yeah, from a footballing perspective, it's a weird one, but you know, we know that Southgate trusts Jordan Henderson, and you know, he hears a big voice as well. We've heard lots about that in the past. But yeah, if it was me, and obviously it's not, I'd want to give some other players, I think, a bit more of a chance, you know, especially in these games where England have already, well, nearly qualified, and you know, mix it up a little bit.
Yeah, who do you think are the candidates that will be thinking, well, this is an opportunity for me to be getting time playing for England? If we are on this, you know, steady trajectory towards the tournament, should we be blooding in younger players, giving them more of an opportunity? Who would be on your hit list if it wasn't going to be Henderson?
Yeah, I mean, there's quite a lot, to be honest. It's not a great time to be a promising English midfielder because there's just so many people ahead of you. I mean, but looking at the Premier League, I mean, Morgan Gibbs-White, I think he's been really, really good. And obviously Nick will be very appreciative of how good he's been over the last season or so. I mean, 31.2% of Forest's expected assists last season came from Morgan Gibbs-White, and that's the highest proportion of any player for any team. So it just shows how important he is. No player kind of carries the creative responsibility of one team on his shoulders more than Gibbs-White. So he's played really, really well. Loftus-Cheek out in Milan has started really well. There was a really good clip of Rafael Leao and Teo Hernandez just in disbelief that he was substituted on the weekend against Roma. So shows how impressed his new teammates have been with him as well. And yeah, just Jacob Ramsey, there's Curtis Jones as well. Lots and lots of players who I think, especially when, and you know, England wrap this group up, I'd like to see some of them just given a chance.
Nick, I'm not going to ask you about Morgan Gibbs-White. I wanted to just go back to Jordan Henderson. And I'll be brutally honest, have you watched any of the Saudi Pro League games?
No, absolutely
yeah,
not.
I haven't either. And maybe that is being unfair to the Saudi Pro League, and maybe I'm not in a position to be asking this question.
There's only so many hours in the day. We've only got so much time to watch much football.
There is part of that. But in terms of, you know, the line that is often attached to the Jordan Henderson debate is, well, he's playing in a league that isn't of the standard that qualifies you to play international football. Have you got any sort of defence for Southgate in him being selected, having been playing that football?
Defence is maybe the wrong word, but Southgate manages England kind of like a club team. He pays attention to how players are playing with their clubs, but he will place more emphasis on what certain players have done for England in the past. But on that basis, he will probably continue to play Jordan Henderson in the same way that he, you know, he's not been like an automatic starter for England, I don't think. But Southgate will sort of continue to play him in the same way that he did before until he feels that his kind of levels have dropped or whatever, presumably as a consequence of playing in a much less competitive league.
Yeah, okay. And we've seen him, select the likes of Harry Maguire, even Calvin Phillips in this squad, which has gone against the grain if you're picking on players playing in the Premier League. Tom, I just wanted to get a quick word from you on the Ukraine players, because we have been a little bit sort of one-eyed, haven't we? Oh, England, yeah, they're going to win. They're going to continue winning all their games. Are Ukraine going to be a threat? And if they are, who should we be looking out for?
Yeah, I mean, England still overwhelming favourites because, you know, we beat them back in March. It was quite comfortable, 2-0, probably could have been a lot more. Also in the Euros as well, I mean, not that doesn't have any bearing on what's going to happen this weekend, but we have recent history over Ukraine and, yeah, probably should be okay. But, I mean, just from a La Liga perspective, I know Tomas might have seen a bit of Viktor Sigankov. He's just been a joy to watch since he's moved to Girona from Dinamo Kiev. three goals and seven assists, and he's just really, really good, kind of drifting in from the right-hand side onto his left foot, kind of like Bernardo Silva, but maybe a bit less kind of tenacious defensively. He's actually linked up with striker Artem Dovbik, who's also now at Girona. And you might remember he scored a 121st minute winner against Sweden at the Euros. And that winner then sent Ukraine through to play England, where obviously England won. So yeah, two exciting players there. Malinovsky as well. He's been around Europe. He's currently on loan at Genoa, and he's got a really, really nice long distance left footed strike. So there are, you know, players to get excited about, but I don't think, you know, a sustained kind of threat, which is, it's, you know, shouldn't be enough to beat England.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
I just wanted to ask Nick about the England situation after the Euros. Euro 2024, Gareth Southgate has a contract until the end of that tournament. Do you think that there's an obvious candidate, if he doesn't go on and win it, and then there is public pressure to say, well, of course he has to stay on until the World Cup and all that, is there an obvious candidate, if it doesn't go to plan, for who takes over?
I wonder whether he, even if England do win it, he'll kind of say, well, okay, I'm out, you know, I've done all I can, and that's me now. Because he sort of, it felt like he had to be persuaded a little bit to stay after the World Cup, yeah, as well. So, but anyway, in terms of the next person, it's really interesting because, I mean, at the moment, it's the situation is going to be very different in kind of a year's time. Who's available? Who's not? At the moment, it feels like Eddie Howe, for example, who's going to be one of the candidates, is wrapped up for the long term at Newcastle. But you know, if they keep playing like they've been playing, you never know. Graham Potter is currently out of work, but you'd imagine he will get a job soonish. I think the reports that he turned down Lyon this week, so people are obviously asking. Pep Guardiola is an interesting one. He might be sort of done at Manchester City by then. But I can't really think, and I'm happy to be corrected here, I can't think of a manager less suited to international football than Guardiola. It just seems kind of too intense, too, like, you know, needs to be constantly on at the players, and when they're off playing for clubs and he's kind of kicking his heels for, you know, 3 months at a time, I think he'd go out of his mind. The one that really that isn't mentioned, and there's probably a very good reason for it, I was surprised that Carlo Ancelotti has never managed a country before. It feels like he should have had sort of an underwhelming 2 years in charge of Italy in the early 2000s or something, but he hasn't. Now, it looks like he's going to Brazil, and there's apparently a gentleman's agreement that he will take over when his Real Madrid contract expires. But I don't know, any chance of a little gazumping there, do you think? It feels like it fits.
Do you think they would go down the foreign route again?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Do you think?
Yeah, I don't know.
Any other shouts from either of you guys in terms of potential England managers?
No, I was going to say, if we've got Guardiola on there, then surely we have to have Mourinho on the shortlist, don't we?
Yeah.
Break things.
I'd like to distance Jose Mourinho from the, but for very different reasons.
I thought you were just going to distance the country from approaching. Yeah. But you never know. You never know. Just a quick word. We mentioned Jude Bellingham earlier on. We have to mention another young England star firing on all cylinders at the moment. Quite the week for Bukayo Saka, named England Player of the Year for the second year in a row. On his birthday as well, he won the PFA Young Player of the Year. He was named on the Ballon d'Or shortlist for the very first time as well. Things are going well, I think you can safely say, for Bukayo Saka. And The Athletic has released a special podcast episode to coincide with his big week, charting his remarkable rise by speaking to coaches from throughout his career. The likes of Ian Wright as well feature on the podcast. And if you hang around until the end of this podcast episode, you'll be able to hear a little teaser from that show that I was talking about. And to listen to that episode, search for the Athletic's documentary podcast channel, Go Deeper, wherever you get your podcasts. Now, Spain head to Georgia on Friday. Massive 9 points behind the Group C leaders, Scotland, already, with Norway also in a tough group. They're guaranteed a playoff place, though, after winning the Nations League earlier on in the summer. But it is safe to say that the biggest stories in Spain at the moment are very much off the pitch. Since Spain's women won the World Cup nearly 3 weeks ago, the country has been engulfed in crisis and controversy. There have been other stories as well in La Liga. And Thomas, just bring us up to speed with where we are on the Spanish women's story at the moment, because the coach who was there lifting the World Cup is no longer there, and they have moved in terms of that part of the story, haven't they?
Yeah, it's been another crazy week in the Spain story, Adam. As you say, World Cup winning manager Jorge Vilda sacked earlier this week, replaced with his longtime assistant, Montse Tomé. Also, we had the development this week of Jennifer Hermoso filing a legal complaint against Rubiales, which means he could face criminal charges. That's for the unsolicited kiss on her during the World Cup medal ceremony. Yeah, it's just been another crazy week, really, and it shows no signs of slowing down. The men's team have come out and condemned Rubiales for his behaviour without expressly calling for his resignation, and a lot remains to be seen, a lot still up in the air.
Just explain on Luis Rubiales, in terms of that difference between the men's team and the women's team, because they were very much on a front foot position, the women's team, that they would not play again if he was still in position. And that is still something that he's still in situ. And we're only a couple of weeks away from Spain's women playing against Sweden on September the 22nd. So something needs to change for the world champions to actually play again.
That's it. So he's been provisionally suspended by FIFA for 90 days. Obviously, this process is still ongoing. But as you say, 81 past and present Spain players signed this letter saying they wouldn't play again for Spain until the current leadership left. Obviously, Vilda is a part of that. He's been a big part of these protests in September by 15 players as well. But whether replacing him with his longtime assistant is going to be enough, I think, still remains to be seen. If I were one of these Spain players who'd signed the letter, I think I'd be looking for long-standing change across the federation. And at the moment, I don't really see that.
Is there the feeling that the suspension might be enough for those female players to play again? Or do they want him gone?
I think they want him gone, and not just that, they want a lot of his key allies gone. We saw that incendiary speech that Rubiales made a couple of weeks ago, where he talked of false feminism being a scourge in Spain. If any of you have seen that, the amount of people applauding in that room, I think, was arguably the most shocking aspect of that footage. And from Spain women's point of view, they'll want assurances that those kind of attitudes are out of the federation. At the moment, I don't see that happening, and I'm not sure how you can achieve that. I think that might be a process that takes 10 years, possibly.
Nick, did you want to come in on this?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask Thomas what the reaction was to the statement that the men's players put out, which I think it's just one. It's still just Borja Iglesias who has said he's not, you know, he's kind of not playing, doesn't want to play for the national team. The statement seemed to be kind of, it smacked a little bit of them feeling like they had to say something, but it was just like, okay, we've said something now we just want to get on with the football.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right there, Nick. Even in the statement itself, as you say there, the last point was saying, you know, we've said this now, we want to move on to the important business of playing football matches. Well, the women's team simply don't have that choice. There's been a worrying lack of male players coming out who actually have something to lose. Borja Iglesias, I think, was a really good example of someone who did have something to lose, but even then, he's only won two caps for Spain. He's the only active player I can see out there who had a real, even a small chance of making the Spain squad, who put that position on the line. A lot of other players have said, look, we didn't know who was going to be in the squad until that came out this week. That doesn't seem like enough to me, and I know that a lot of other Spanish people agree with that as well.
And just going back to Avilde, I mean, some people have said, oh, he's only been sacked because he was applauding Rubiales' speech, which is preposterous to say the least, because it's a far bigger story and it goes back a long way. But there has been a lot of attention on those people in the room. Like Thomas was saying, Tom, you know, people clapping in the room. It was a moment that caught a lot of people's eyes.
No voy a dimitir. No voy a dimitir. No voy a dimitir.
Yeah, I mean, one of the people clapping was Luis de la Fuente, who is the Spanish national men's team manager. And he was questioned about it there a couple of days ago in a press conference. And his answers were very panicky, to say the least. He said, you have to understand the context, the spotlight. It was too much for me. I wasn't up for it. I didn't act in the right way. Sometimes within the forest, all you see is branches. When you step out, you see properly. I'm not justifying anything. It's unjustifiable. I'm only trying to explain the context. So very much saying that, you know, playing the kind of I'm not very well PR trained and just saying, you know, I'm just focusing on football. Like Thomas was saying, a lot of the men's players seem to have been doing as well. Slightly disappointing. He has apologised profusely, but did really give the impression that, you know, he was completely understanding what his actions signified.
Yeah, agreed with Tom there. I thought De La Fuente was really unimpressive in that speech, looked panicky. The only thing you could say for him was that he answered the questions, but the answers didn't convince me at all. You're absolutely right, Adam, as well, to say that the Wilder thing goes way beyond any applause, although obviously that's reprehensible that, you know, particularly the moment where Rubiales starts talking about false feminism, that Wilder's one of the first to be applauding a lot, even if he apologises afterwards. This goes back to the 15 players who stood down last September over principally his methods and the idea that an unprofessional atmosphere had been created around the Spanish national camp. Yeah, this goes way back, and I think maybe that's been something really good about our coverage, if I can toot our horn, has been that we've managed to place this in the wider context of not just Wilder's reign, but the reign of Ignacio Quereda before him, a manager with lots of problems as well for Spain. This is a big long-standing problem in the Spanish FA.
Well, the football does go on for Spain, and just to slightly change tack now, there is some excitement within that Spain squad. Barcelona's Lamine Yamal, teenage sensation, has been named in the squad. Just tell us, for people who aren't familiar, about the player and why people should be excited, because he's potentially going to be a record-breaking player, becoming the youngest player to play for Spain.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's 16 years old, really exciting, dynamic winger, nimble footwork. I don't think I've seen excitement for a player like this since possibly Ansu Fati, who was kind of tipped to be Messi's heir. Obviously, we know he's gone to Brighton now on loan. I think this move from the Spanish FA, clearly they wanted to tie him down in the face of pressure from the Moroccan FA. Really exciting player, and the only thing that remains to be seen really is how this spotlight affects him. So far, he's playing for Barcelona. He's just been called up for Spain. Doesn't seem to be affecting him. We'll see what happens.
Just a couple of other things that have piqued our interest from this international window that we just wanted to stick a flag in. Luciano Spalletti is going to be taking charge of his first game as Italy manager this weekend. They take on North Macedonia. That's in England's group. We mentioned before that England won out in Italy at the start of the group stages. St James's Park hosting former Italy manager Roberto Mancini and his new Saudi Arabia side twice this week. Nothing to see here. Everything's fine as they take on Costa Rica on Friday and South Korea on Tuesday. I mean, how does that make you feel in the broader context? We can't go into everything Newcastle and Saudi Arabia, but it is just, I think the word that comes to mind is brazen to me. Is that fair?
I'd like to pick you up on something there, Adam. It's Newcastle and the Public Investment Fund, which has no connection to the Saudi state.
Oh, yes, sorry. Yes,
they,
I do apologise.
They wrote a note or something to the Premier League saying that. Yeah, I mean, it is brazen. Anyone who has spent any time on social media and has seen the kind of reaction to pieces that people write against the Saudi involvement with Newcastle, the things that always comes up is, well, where were you when you haven't talked about Manchester City's ownership or that kind of thing? And the answers to those questions are usually A, yes, we have for the most part, and B, if there is more attention on Newcastle, it is because, as you say, they're so brazen about it. They're You only have to look at their away kit for the last couple of seasons, which is basically the Saudi Arabian colours, certainly. And now, you know, hosting two games, they just, you know, just happened to, the stadium just happened to be available for these couple of games. So, yeah, I don't know whether it's intentional, but it feels like a sort of flipping the bird to any, you know, critics. And I was, well, you know, you want to complain about this, then we're just going to kind of double down on it. So, yeah, it's not great.
No, the horse has bolted and it's showing no signs of being stopped, unfortunately, for some critics. In terms of just one other thing I wanted to mark, World Cup 2026 qualifying starts in South America, likes of Argentina, Brazil in action. Marcelo Bielsa is managing Uruguay for the first time. He's just sort of understatedly dropped both Suarez and Cavani out of his side. He's, you know, he's brought in all the under 23s. That's what he wanted to do. And one other game that you wanted to mark as well, Nick?
Yeah. So on Friday night, Turkey are playing Armenia. It's taking place in somewhere which I confess I didn't really know anything about before. Eskişehir, I think, which is a couple of 100 miles south of Istanbul, very small place, host to a third division Turkish team. And I think the reason it's probably being held there is because if this game was held in Istanbul, it would probably kick off massively, because this is a game between two countries who only very limited diplomatic relations have existed over the years, which is broadly rooted in a genocide which took place over a century ago. They played each other, I think it was around 2008, and back then it was very much used as a kind of diplomatic tool to maybe try and get the two countries talking. This time it's quite deliberately not being used as that, and they're trying to make it as just a standalone football fixture. And it is quite an interesting game just on the face of it. Armenia have started the qualification pretty well. They lost the reverse game against Turkey, but they've won their two other games, and all this without Henrik Mkhitaryan, which I think is probably the only Armenian player that most people know. And he retired last year, I think, from international football. So it's just it's a really interesting story, and I can recommend an excellent article about it on The Athletic, written by me.
Ah, there we are. I understand now.
It was basically a long, very long-winded, shameless plug for
No, but it is interesting, and it's always good to find out the context behind some of these fixtures as well. That's one of seven Euro 2024 qualifiers on Friday night, which you can see in the UK if you're in the UK on Viaplay.
Sure, which we're all subscribed to.
Exactly.
We've all got Viaplay.
We had to look it up. And we will, of course, more importantly, be covering all of the fixtures and the stories that come out of it on The Athletic. Now, since our last show, the transfer window has slammed shut, and I just wanted to have a quick look back at it with you. We've sort of stripped it down, and I've got some questions for the three of you, if you're happy to play along. In your eyes, which Premier League team won the transfer window? I'll start with you, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, if I ever get a chance to talk about Andoni Areola, I'm going to take it. So I'm going to talk about Bournemouth, because, I mean, they've not started excellently in terms of points gained, but I think there's been some really encouraging progress in terms of play style and some of the players they brought in. Milos Kerkez at left back has been sensational since he's joined. Alex Scott as well to come into that midfield. Tyler Adams, Luis Sinisterra. There's some quite high quality players there. And I think when Dango Ouattara as well returns from injury, they could really click into gear. I'm quite looking forward to seeing how that goes.
I wasn't expecting Bournemouth to have won the transfer window for you, but that's good. I like that. But actually, maybe I should have done. Maybe the hipster's choice. I should have known that. Thomas, from your point of view?
Well, it's no surprise with the Spanish link that I think Aston Villa have won the transfer window under Unai Emery. I mean, look, they brought in a lot of players, but I like the likes of Musa Diaby, Pau Torres, Yuri Tielemans. I think they're all players who suit Emery's style of play. Mixed results so far, but I like how Villa are going all in on Emery. That will definitely come back to bite me later in the season. I'm sure of it, but still.
Who won the window for you, Nick?
Some non-obnoxious answers, possibly Liverpool, because they, sort of halfway through this transfer window, they were suddenly and slightly unexpectedly given the task of replacing their entire midfield.
Yeah.
And the early sort of indications are they've actually done that pretty well in today's market to bring in an entirely new section of your team. That's about as well as you could think they could realistically have done it, I think.
Well, especially if they'd only bought one player that they were after in Caicedo, they could have spent all of that money or near enough on just the one player.
And kind of recovering it from that, because the whole Caicedo Lavia thing was a complete shambles. And at that point, it looked like they had made a complete mess of everything. But it sort of looks like they've recovered it from that point.
Yeah, it looks as if they've styled it out. You're right.
Yeah.
Let's quickly go around the team that lost the transfer window. Ringing alarm bells in my mind is Everton. I don't know if anyone agrees with me on Everton, or do you have different choices?
Yeah, Everton, one of the teams I had down simply because they, apart from up front, they look weaker than they did at the start. And I'm only saying up front because Beto looks quite fun.
They've got one guy that looks good, but they've got rid of, Iwobi, Damari Gray, and Mope.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, you might not be fans of those three players, but they haven't got them anymore, and they haven't necessarily bought anyone to support.
The other team I had written down was Crystal Palace, basically, because they lost Wilfried Zaha, didn't really replace him. They haven't really got anyone who a striker or centre forward that consistently scores goals. Odson Edouard has scored a couple of goals, I think. Has he scored one goal? Yeah. Mateta actually looked pretty good when he came on at the weekend, but over the season, I wouldn't rely on those two to score many goals. So,
but they happily kept a very happy Michael Olise, who looked delighted.
That is true.
To be staying at the club when he was alongside, the chairman. Tom, go on. You run through your losers.
Yeah, I mean, agree with Nick on most of those. I mean, I think Luton have had a bad window in terms of recruiting quality in order to stay in the Premier League, but I don't think it's a nightmare, because if they go back down, they have quite a strong Championship squad. I think they built some good foundations. So it's a bit harsh maybe to say Luton, but I don't think they've brought in the necessary quality to stay up immediately. But I think, you know, in the long term, it's not the worst.
Yeah. They've stuck to their wage structure, which, yeah, people can argue one way or the other. But the history of the club, I suppose, knowing if you over budget or you get into financial difficulties, then maybe it is a sensible approach. And who knows? Kenilworth Road might become the fortress that they hope it will be. Thomas, your losers?
Yeah, well, Tom and I are going to fall out about this, but I think potentially Bournemouth, depending on how the season pans out.
Okay, I like this. Head to head.
And this is not so much in terms of players they haven't brought in, because they brought in a lot of players, you know, according to Transfermarkt, kind of €127 million worth of expenditure. I think that's a lot for a club of their level. Will it work out? We'll see. At the moment, the signs are bad, but equally, you know, we're only a couple of games in, so that will probably be totally wrong.
We will see what happens. We can refer back to it at the end of the season. Right, two more, and we'll whistle through these. The signing of the summer, Nick?
The obvious ones are kind of people like James Maddison. I really like Cameron Archer. I think he's a kind of nicely suited to Sheffield United as well, and it's a bit of a shame that Villa had to sell him, really. But yeah, beyond the more obvious ones, he'd be my pick, I think.
Tom, signing of the summer?
I've got high hopes for Mohamed Kudus at West Ham.
Yeah.
I like their other signings in Alvarez and Ward-Prowse. I think they brought some really nice profiles in to replace Declan Rice. And I just think Kudus is just really brilliant to watch, and he's great when there's space to run into. And I think hopefully that should fit kind of West Ham's transitional style. Really good ball striker as well. He's capable of winning games by himself. So I think if he settles in and settles into West Ham's way of playing, I think he could be a good shout.
Thomas?
I really like Ansu Fati to Brighton. I mean, we were talking a bit about him before. He did look totally shot in terms of confidence at Barca. I'm confident this is the move that can kind of breathe fresh life into his career again, away from the spotlight, away from the Camp Nou. I think De Zerbi could definitely give him the boost he needs. And I like the fact that De Zerbi seems to have gone all in on him.
Okay. And final one, the signing that's confused you, Nick.
With the significant caveat that Manchester City seem to know what they're doing, broadly speaking, I don't really get Nunes.
Mm.
I've never really seen him have a brilliant game or certainly play well enough to make you think, yeah, he's a Man City player.
And the way that he left Wolves, it seemed a little bit mischievous. Do you think that he's a mischievous individual, or do you think it was just the circumstances?
Probably just circumstances. Yeah. You know,
Pep will iron them out anyway.
Sure, I'm sure he will. Yeah, yeah. He's an intense man.
Yes.
So yeah, I'm sure he will.
Okay. Confusing signing for you?
Yeah, sticking on the City theme, maybe Cole Palmer to Chelsea. Not so much for the player that they're getting because he's brilliant, but it does seem a very, very expensive acquisition for Chelsea. They have a lot of players in those kind of winger positions, and I'm a bit worried that it stunts his growth a little bit. Not that he would have got loads of minutes at City, but not 100% convinced that he'll get a lot more at Chelsea either.
Yeah, it was £45 million, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah, quite hefty.
Well, you know. Small change when you've spent, what, £1 billion? That took them over £1 billion, didn't it, during the transfer window at Chelsea. And Thomas, finally to you, the one that's confused you.
Yeah, I would have said Cole Palmer too, yeah. But given that Tom has so rudely taken that away from me, I'll probably go for Neil Mopé back to Brentford. I know that he's obviously done well for them in the past, but I didn't see anything at Everton to suggest he's a prolific goal scorer. I understand Tony's out, obviously, but yeah, not for me.
Okay. We will see how he fares back at his old stomping ground. That is all we have time for. We've got through plenty of differing stories on this episode. Thank you very much to Nick.
Thank you.
To Tom.
Thanks very much.
And to Thomas.
Thanks for having me on.
Great debut. Thank you very much indeed. Io Akinwoleri is going to be back next week. I will be back next Friday. Your producer today was John Rogers. Your executive producer was Adam Jones. And if you have enjoyed the show over the season so far, make sure you subscribe to The Athletic. You can sign up right now for our best ever price of £1 or $1 a month for an entire year at theathletic.com/footballpod. And as promised, we depart with a little flavour of The Athletic's dedicated Bukayo Saka episode that we teased a little bit earlier on in the show. Thanks very much for listening.
He's the one. He's called God's child. He's the special one who everybody's expecting the great things from.
When you see him, your eyes light up.
His temperament is, I think, exceptional, as is, of course, his ability.
He's a very easygoing, gentle, humble guy, incredibly humble. And yet he has this capacity to make everyone around him feel better and play better.
It's one thing to produce a player of that calibre, but to produce a person of that calibre is quite another.
Yeah, Ian Wright always supports me on TV, so yeah, shout out to him.
We're seeing it now, especially with everything what happened with the Euros. We're seeing he's gone somewhere else in respect of the levels and his ability.
Saka again, looking to curl one, and he does! His first goal for Arsenal, and he caps a glittering display with a lovely goal.
Saka keeps on going himself. Oh, why wouldn't he? Glorious goal from Bukayo Saka to make it four.
And Martinelli, and it came for Saka, who scores in a trice. He can do no wrong.
Bukayo Saka's story is inspiring, uplifting, educational, beautiful to watch.
The Athletic.